Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, stream our show at nprnews.org/listen live every weekday at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the show.
Now to the questions that must be asked in the investigation into George Floyd's death. As you know, he died in police custody Monday night after a police officer kneeled on Floyd's neck as he was attempting to arrest him. Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey was outraged when he saw video of the arrest, and Governor Tim Walz wrote on Twitter, quote, "The lack of humanity in this disturbing video is sickening." The four officers involved were fired Tuesday afternoon, and you heard Phil Picardi reporting on how protests erupted last night near a police station. We're turning, as we often do, to former Gainesville, Florida police officer David Thomas for some perspective. Dr. Thomas is now a senior research fellow at the Police Foundation, and he joins us from Gainesville, Florida. And David, I really appreciate the time, as always, on these situations. So thank you.
Thank you for having me.
We talked frequently about the presence of video in cases like these, the body cams of the police officers that were involved in this incident, and a bystander captured this incident. I want to know what you see in the way that it unfolded.
What I see is incomprehensible. And by that, I mean, is you have a man on the ground, Mr. Floyd. You have an officer with his knee on his neck. And I don't know what the other officers are doing that you can't see in the video. And so, but if somebody's begging for air, then at some point you need to, like, ease up or get up, reposition him so that he can breathe. And so to me, it's a bad situation, and there's malfeasance. But on the other side of that, I don't know what happened before we got there. I see him getting him out of his vehicle, mm-hmm. and whatever struggle happened between that time and the time that he ends up on the ground, I'm not sure. But whatever it was, he was already handcuffed. And so and handcuffed doesn't necessarily mean that a person is under control, because they can still actively resist.
Okay.
But at that point where he was on the ground, he was absolutely positively under control. And they should have backed up, got off of him, flipped him over, or sat him up so that he could breathe.
So you've said something important there, which is about the idea that the police department is saying is that he was continuing to resist arrest. You're saying that even though he was handcuffed, it is possible for a suspect to be resisting. But when you see this video, it is clear that George Floyd was at this point under control. Is that right?
That is correct. So keep in mind that people, they kick, they try to headbutt you, they try to snatch away. All of this happens while they're being handcuffed. So they're not necessarily in control, under control.
Okay.
When he is on that ground, though, and he has the knee on his neck, he is absolutely positively under control. The placing the knee on the neck is a very old technique. It's something that I was taught. I've been retired 42 years now. I retired 22 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was something I was taught back in 1978. As I trained recruits, I realized the easier way to do it is you could literally pin their shoulder to the ground and they can't move.
When you pin the shoulders with your hand? Oh, with your
knee. With the knee.
Okay.
Yep. And that leaves the neck and the airway free. And as long as nobody is pressing or putting body weight on his abdomen, meaning that they're pressing on his back and forcing his abdomen into the ground where he can't breathe, then there shouldn't be a problem at all.
What is the procedure supposed to be when a suspect, no matter what kind of a hold that you have them in, is saying that they're having respiratory problems? What is a police officer supposed to do?
They should readjust. And by that, I mean move to another technique. In this instance, you could have sat him up. You could have rolled him over on his stomach. And if they were worried about him kicking and flailing, all you have to do is have another officer sit on his feet have somebody hold his shoulders down. I mean, it's not rocket science. You could sit him up just as long as you can. But, and I'm going to tell you this, and quite honestly, when I fought with people and it's been bad, I mean, rough struggles, mm-hmm. when it's over and we're in this position, I will always ask the question, are you through? So I give them an opportunity to just communicate that they're finished, that the resistance is over, and that they'll go along with what you have to, you know, with the next phase of it.
Mm-hmm. I'm struck by what you said about how the technique that you see in this video is an old technique, and I'm wondering if you're aware of whether police departments are updating, you know, these holds that you've been talking about, or is it? A lot of those procedures are tried and true, and police departments see no reason to, you know, mess with success.
Well, I think what has happened, and I don't know how often they train, but one of those areas is oftentimes is defensive tactics kind of gets lost. Those empty hand skills get lost in the training struggle.
Why?
Because there's so many other things that have to be done. The state may mandate. Like, let's say, like here in the state of Florida, the state may mandate firearms training. They also may mandate that there's juvenile sexual predator training. So there's certain types of training that the state may mandate. And the agency, because of lack of money or lack of resources, may not have the ability to go and do, let's say, put on yearly training that deals with empty hand control techniques or defensive tactics. And it gets lost in the struggle. And on top of that, it is a skill that diminishes over time. So if I don't use it, then that skill set is lost and you revert back to the old things that you have used in the past.
I see. Yeah. David Thomas is with us. He's a retired Gainesville police officer, senior research fellow at the National Police Foundation. And we asked him if he would review the video of what happened with George Floyd and the behavior of the police officers and the behavior of Mr. Floyd, and then take note of what the reaction in the community, by the governor, by the mayor, by the police department, and by the police chief has been. We have a call here, David, from Walter in Crystal. Hey, Walter, what are you interested
in?
Good morning.
Morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have some questions. First of all, as to why the suspect was on the ground for a nonviolent crime. Or a suspected crime. Second question is, how did the person that may have had a medical issue, according to the police, get from his car to the back of the squad car and on the ground? The next question is, isn't that takedown method with a police officer on the back of the suspect, a trained takedown method? And I say that because that's what happened to Jamar Clark. He was in that resisting that position when he was shot. The same thing happened with, in my opinion, to Freddie Gray, even though they said he broke his neck in this patrol car.
Mm-hmm. In Baltimore.
Yeah. Right, in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the
okay questions,
and it seems as though that's something regular, and I've seen it personally more than enough times.
Okay, these are good questions, David. First, that question about why do we have a sense about this would be what you would do with a suspect who is resisting? Put them on the ground, because as Walter notes, this was a nonviolent or potential crime.
Right. And again, it goes back to the level of resistance that the officers were receiving. And that's the part that we don't see in the video. And the only way we're going to be able to determine that is when you get the officers' body cams, because that clearly will show what the level of resistance was. I know I heard one of the guys on the video that was shooting the video actually stated, well, yeah, they were trying to put you in the car and you fought.
Mm-hmm.
So that next level is usually taking somebody to the ground, but it doesn't mean sit on the back of their neck or kneel on the back of their neck for over 4 minutes. That makes no sense.
Walter was asking about this takedown technique. I think you've spoken to this, that this is an old technique of putting your knee on the neck, and there are updated techniques that you didn't see being used there.
Right. And usually, and the easiest way to describe it, as opposed to putting your knee on the neck, if you put your knee in the, along on the scapula and pin the shoulder, and it runs, your bent leg runs along, let's say the length of the spine, then there's no way of actually affecting the spine or the neck or the airway.
Walter also mentioned Freddie Gray. What came to my mind was the death of Eric Garner in New York City, where he repeatedly told the police officers that he couldn't breathe. And the officer in that case, Daniel Pantaleo, after years, was never charged in that death. And I guess the question that that raises for me, David, is, you know, the video looks like what it is. We've seen the reaction. But does this get much more complicated once it gets potentially to court?
I don't think so. In this instance, I don't think so.
Okay.
Even if we scream about, you know, they say that he had a medical issue. Well, I wonder what the nature of the medical issue is. If we're saying that he was having a psychotic break and he had a mental health condition, then I recognize that we end up wrestling with people to control them. But there is a better way to do that. I mean, there's a more humane way to do that. I would even go so far as to say that oftentimes you can, if they have tasers, not tase them, but just by just arcing the taser, what actually happens is that brings attention to somebody and it stops them from resisting.
So you're saying use the taser, but not on the person.
And you may have to, if they are completely out of control, you may have to in order to control them. So, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility. But you can always kind of, you can put it out there so the person understands that this is what's going to happen. So they get the gist of, if you don't stop, this is what's going to happen.
Got it. Call here from Mark in Excelsior. Hi, Mark.
Hi there. My question is, why is when someone is handcuffed, they are really having a hard time getting up and running? Why are officers so strongly move to put him in a car or whatever? When a guy could get up, you could trip him, push him down. It would take minutes if anyone can even get up after they're handcuffed. Why is it so important for officers to think that they have to completely stop a person from moving?
Okay. David?
I think the reality is that, and I've seen this happen a bunch of times, where people are handcuffed and you're trying to control them, but they still have the ability, and understand this, even though I can trip them, I still have the ability to roll over and kick. I still have the ability to take, believe it or not, people sit, they get in a seated position and bring the handcuffs around to the front of their body. So there has to be some degree of control, but I don't think it has to be, there's no way that what we saw with Mr. Floyd, that should have never taken place.
David, just a quick last question here. I mean, we have heard leaders in the African-American community here say they don't trust the FBI to investigate this. I guess, do you understand that distrust? Do you have confidence that the FBI, when they get involved in these cases anywhere, can be trusted?
I do, because I think when it comes down to it, that is the last authority that we have. If there is a case to be brought, then they can bring it. The difficulty in a lot of these cases is that, and you know this, what's happened in Minnesota, is that when it goes to a jury trial, it's very hard to convict officers.
Yes.
I think because the jury sides with them, and they say, well, this, you know, it's hard to put yourself in the officer's shoes and say that the officer was in fear for his or her life. In this instance, I don't think that's that difficult because it's obvious that there's a true disdain for what transpired.
David, it is really valuable for us to get your insight. Thank you so much for the availability this morning.
Thank you.
David Thomas is a retired Gainesville police officer. He's now a senior research fellow at the National Police Foundation in Gainesville, Florida.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. If you'd like to hear more conversations like this, subscribe to our podcast. And thanks for listening.